From Du Bois to Philadelphia, Saxonburg to Warren, this is Lincoln Radio Journal. On this edition, it is budget time in Harrisburg, and lawmakers are working to meet the June 30th deadline for having a new state spending plan in place. This year, the problem isn't not enough money, but how to spend a surplus and billions in federal recovery funds. Our Capital Watch crew is here to explain. And the new normal, will it be one of endless government control or one of newfound freedoms? I'll have a town hall commentary. I'm Loman Henry, and welcome to Lincoln Radio Journal. We'll get to our Capital Watch crew in just a couple of minutes, but first we have news headlines from patownhall.com. The Pennsylvania House of Representatives this past week passed the Pennsylvania Voting Rights Protection Act by a vote of 110 to 91. 10 hearings were held into Pennsylvania's election process, resulting in the bill, which provides for early in-person voting, the formal recognition and regulation of ballot drop boxes, 5 days of additional pre-canvassing time, enhanced voter ID requirements, and the protection of voting rights for handicapped and older Pennsylvanians. The bill also includes provisions for modernizing administrative functions and historic amounts of funding for county election bureaus. The bill now goes to the state Senate and must ultimately be signed by Governor Tom Wolf, who has threatened to veto the measure as he disagrees with some components of the proposed new law. One of the last vestiges of government control over the personal lives of Pennsylvania citizens will come to an end on Monday. That is when the mask mandate will be lifted. In recent weeks, those who are fully vaccinated were not required to wear masks in public spaces, but those unvaccinated were required to continue wearing the masks. Most of the Wolf administration's draconian restrictions put in place supposedly to fight the COVID-19 pandemic were lifted weeks ago, especially after the legislature exercised its new constitutional powers to bring an end to the governor's emergency powers. Over 70% of Pennsylvanians have been at least partially vaccinated, and the number of new cases has plummeted in recent weeks. Congressional redistricting is about to take center stage. Every 10 years following the census, the number of congressional seats allocated to each state is reapportioned to account for population changes. As a result, Pennsylvania will lose one congressional seat as our population growth has not kept pace with other states. That means the district map must be redrawn to reduce the number of districts in Pennsylvania from 18 to 17. State Senator Dave Argall, who will oversee the task in the Senate, says his goal will be a transparent process, and he wants to keep districts as compact and contiguous as possible while keeping each district even in population. Read about all things Pennsylvania at patownhall.com. The new state fiscal year begins July 1, and that means lawmakers are now in the often chaotic process of finalizing the state budget. With billions of American Recovery Act dollars on the table, key spending decisions need to be made. Here to sort through all of this is our Capital Watch crew. David Taylor from the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association is joined by Rebecca Euler from the Pennsylvania Motor Truck Association and by Stephen Bloom of the Commonwealth Foundation. David?
And welcome once again to Capital Watch, where we keep an eye on what's happening under the Capitol Dome in Harrisburg for you. I'm your host, David Taylor, President and CEO of the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association. With me in the studio, your all-star team, my main man, Steve Bloom, Vice President of the Commonwealth Foundation. Steve, great to see you.
Great to see you, David.
And as ever, Rebecca Euler, President and CEO of the Pennsylvania Motor Truck Association. Rebecca, thanks for being here.
Good to be here again, David. Thanks.
Well, of course, it's the most wonderful time of the year. It's budget week. It's budget time in Harrisburg as we get down to the end of the fiscal year on June 30. And we're in a truly unprecedented circumstance where, because of the CARES Act and all of the various, you know, PPP spending and stimulus efforts, that the Treasury is flush with revenue. but it's an illusion. It's not real. It's not recurring. And so now we have one of the most difficult challenges, which is how do you keep the politicians from not blowing the whole lot of it at once?
And I think it's interesting and important to start out by looking at how we got to budget week this year. Because last year, normally Pennsylvania does a state budget every year. Normally the deadline is June 30th. But last year, the COVID outbreak was still ongoing and there was so much uncertainty that the legislature and the governor actually did a partial budget in June. And because they simply didn't know what the future held. No one knew what the course the pandemic would take, what the impact would be on revenues and tax revenues and employment and all those issues. So there was a half-year budget, more or less, not exactly, it was like a seven-month budget, followed by another budget in the middle between budget seasons to get them through to this June, to this budget that's now being contested. At the same time, the governor went through his normal process of presenting a proposed budget in February, like he does every year. The governor always has to do that by way of the Constitution, essentially presenting his first offer for what he expects or wants in a budget. And of course, with Governor Wolf,
his wish list. It's like a 5-year-old's letter to Santa.
Yes, his wish list was long and the numbers were big. And he was not only asking for a lot of spending, but he was also proposing a massive 46% income tax hike on Pennsylvanians coming out of this terrible pandemic with all the unemployment, all the struggle, all the economic stress.
And especially all the small businesses who pay their business taxes at the personal income tax rate.
As partnerships or as corporations, and they pay that exact rate. And here comes Wolf out of the gate proposing a 46% tax increase. Thankfully, the legislature has stood strong against Governor Wolf and basically let the air out of his tax hike balloon early and consistently. And there does not appear at this point to be any threat of those Wolf desired taxes now being imposed. But, you know, it's still lurking in the background. Governor Wolf, he talked about it. He wanted it. And he was bold enough to publicly propose it. So, you know, he still wants that. But at this point, it doesn't look like that is on the table.
Well, I think that is certainly good news that personal income tax increase is seemingly off the table. It doesn't seem to be being discussed right now. I'm glad to hear that because it's like Dave mentioned, those were the small businesses that were hit by the pandemic the hardest, to the ones who were closed and were not able to stay open and compete with the big guys who pay that PIT. Yeah. So that 46% increase that Steve mentioned would have been absolutely devastating. And I think that the fact that he even proposed that, one of the words I think we've used before on the program to describe the governor is tone deaf. To not consider that would have such a devastating impact on those small businesses that are already struggling just to stay together. So I'm glad to hear that's off the table, and I hope we don't see it reemerge. But I'm curious, have you heard any other specific tax increases that are being discussed at all, Steve?
I have not heard any tax increase proposals associated with this budget that's due June 30th.
And correct me if I'm wrong, but I think that's because they're flush with cash, like you said. So maybe they see that as not necessary, but we have to be careful about the spending, as Dave said, too.
Yes. So that's one upside of having this huge danger of so much cash on hand is that at least it does take away the appetite for raising taxes and taking more money out of the private economy.
It's in the short term anyway. It's a beneficial factor in this budget that is being now considered by the legislature and the governor. However, there are dangers lurking behind all this money sitting in the Treasury.
Oh, yeah.
And if anyone who has followed Pennsylvania budgets over the years would think back about 10 years, we know that there was a scenario, not exactly like this, but similar, where the United States was coming out of the Great Recession. There were federal relief dollars being sent to the state in large quantities.
Mm-hmm.
And the legislature and governor at that time used a big chunk of that money to fund ongoing programs, in particular school expenses.
Yep.
So that when that federal money went away, all of a sudden the state was on the hook to somehow fund these programs that had just expanded.
Correct.
And that's the the real danger that is that's underlying all this. Like, it sounds great to know that the Treasury is flush with money. And again, in some ways, that's a good thing, aside from the argument about where did this money really come from.
Of course.
It's sent by the federal government,
right,
who doesn't really have –
Ran the printing press,
right. They didn't really have the money. They made up the money,
yes,
like they've been doing, and which is a danger that we also have to focus. But we're focusing on state policy today. What if that money was allowed to be used to fund ongoing programs? Again, like schools,
yep,
for example.
Up the baseline, uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
Or other ongoing expenses when – either next year or the following year rolls around and revenues return to their normal rate, mm-hmm, generated by the tax revenues of hardworking Pennsylvanians, the state will be in real trouble. And you might again be hearing talk of a gigantic 46% tax hike or even worse.
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember that education increase that the stimulus money went to fund back then. And immediately when the stimulus money was gone, all of a sudden, you know, the state was accused of cutting education funding. So it was called a cut, even though there was an increase in state spending. That lack of federal dollars became all of a sudden, it was a cut.
Yes.
That's exactly where we don't want to end up this time around. We cannot spend that money, that stimulus money, on recurring costs.
And I know that you know, at the federal level, that the executive branch put an awful lot of strings on that money, more or less to incentivize deploying it for new spending, which, of course, is the very thing you don't want to do.
Exactly.
That, you know, if anything, you would want to backfill things like the state unemployment compensation fund that got drained, that you would want to, you know, to commit to one-time expenditures on things like infrastructure. To say, like, to prioritize the most, you know, the roster of the, you know, 20 most efficient bridges in Pennsylvania. Well, let's go and we'll fix those. Or, you know, again, thinking in that manner so that it's one time, it's discreet, it meets an immediate need, but it doesn't put us in that political trap of what to do when the money runs out.
And if you think about it, as you would perhaps if you were simply trying to be a good steward of your own resources.
Yes.
If, you know, you're running your family's life and financial life, and you've got ongoing expenses, and perhaps you have a mortgage, perhaps you have a credit card balance, and you would think of using it for things like paying off the credit card, things that would put you in better stead going forward. But instead, the state government tends to want to do the very opposite.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, like you said, President Biden and the federal restraints around the use of this money actually encourages that notion of simply spending it all now.
Yes.
And so we've got to be really cautious about that.
So the next few days will tell the tale. You know, I'm, as like everybody else, I'm really interested to see how it turns out, because, you know, again, this will condition the battlefield for, you know, for what state government looks like next year and the parameters, you know, of the issues that'll be under discussion, because things, you know, that people didn't get what they want. I saw the, you know, again, not to pick on anybody in particular, but the House Democrats, that they basically have this big spend it now,
yes,
agenda. And it's I don't know. I mean, to my mind, it's kind of comical, because it's like a, you know, it's like a crazy Eddie or something. It's like, you know, everything must go. Like, well, no, we still have a pension crisis, and we still have, you know, so many of these obligations out there, that it really is the idea of, you know, just taking this hand to mouth is deeply irresponsible.
And, you know, we're looking at a budget process here, which is a constitutional process in Pennsylvania. But once the budget actually does get set, and if that vote is in the coming days, as it is likely to be, and the budget is established, there's another danger lurking, which is that Governor Wolf has shown a propensity to go ahead and simply spend more than was allocated. And they call it supplemental spending. But it basically means the governor just kept on spending beyond the amount that had been agreed to. So there's another thing that legislators are going to have to keep a close watch on. Because not only is this federal money come with certain risks, even knowing that a governor like Governor Wolf, with a track record of overspending, is in office is another reason for watchfulness on the part of the legislature. In the last year, Governor Wolf spent almost $1 billion over the allocated budget.
You're listening to Capital Watch. I'm your host, David Taylor from Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association. With me, Steve Bloom from Commonwealth Foundation and Rebecca Euler from the Pennsylvania Motor Truck Association. And so getting back to Governor Wolf and you know, the remainder of his term in office, it seems as though with the defeat that he suffered at the hands of the voters who amended Pennsylvania's constitution to take away his expansive emergency powers and, you know, bring him down to earth with the rest of us mortals, I get the sense that the slow bleed of political capital is underway, that Governor Wolf's stature is diminishing. Do you think that's a fair assessment?
I think it's a fair assessment, David. And if you look at some statewide polling that has been just released in the last week or so, it indicates that the governor's approval rating has dropped from someplace in the 50% or higher range down to 39%. And certainly that part of that has to be attributed to his, I'd say, mismanagement. Sometimes it's been even worse than mismanagement, but mismanagement of the response to the COVID crisis. And, you know, if you look at statistics, the number of businesses that were closed in Pennsylvania during the pandemic by government action was higher than every other state except Michigan. So we are paying a high price for that. Our small businesses, that number that we have open is still down 28%. From January of last year. Many have not reopened. They haven't recovered.
Yeah,
And it's not because they don't want to. It's because they've gone bust.
Right.
Because of this horrific, arbitrary action taken by our state government, in particular the governor's administration, in responding to the pandemic.
And part of it, and you know, I know you guys have heard me say this before, but the fact that he just doesn't listen, that he's not interested in having input from any of the stakeholders, even the people who are most directly affected by his actions, not even to learn from them, hey, what would the results be in the real world if I did, you know, if I took this policy stance? It's just like, no, he's gonna just issue orders and everybody's expected to follow them or try to cope with them as best they can. And the amount of economic dislocation and destruction has really been just, I mean, words fail. This is a bad situation and it never needed to be like this.
It really is heartbreaking. That 28%, I hadn't heard that, Steve, before now. 28% of small businesses, it's really heartbreaking. That is those folks' lives and their livelihood. And it just is really upsetting to me to hear that. But that's another way to look at that is that's our future tax income, too. That is the businesses that were here and paying taxes to the state that are no longer here. So when we're talking about, you know, sort of long term, you know, financial picture of the Commonwealth here and how to handle this budget going into future budgets, we're down all of that tax revenue from all those businesses that are no longer with us and all their employees.
And when you add to that the exodus that you see with the statistics from United Van Lines and Pennsylvania being an outbound state, that, you know, that continues the problem. It makes the problem worse. And, you know, Pennsylvania's chronic economic underperformance year after year, decade after decade, it compounds itself. And this is why we see ourselves losing another seat in the U.S. House of Representatives in the census. And it's, you know, people go where the jobs are. And if our economy is not as vibrant and isn't, you know, creating the same kinds of opportunities as other places, then the population is going to follow to where the opportunities are. And that, again, this comes back to the competitiveness differential that results from state government in Harrisburg. And you know, I continue to argue that the first and most important step is fiscal discipline, to not spend taxpayers' money faster than they can earn it.
Absolutely. And if you think about the impacts of the type of irresponsibility you're talking about, we now have a situation where certainly if it's not general inflation that's taken hold, market-specific inflation has certainly taken hold.
Yes.
And it's affecting the means of production. You know, anyone – I was talking yesterday to a person who has a company that builds housing, and they're facing the unpredictable and high not only lumber costs, which people have heard about, but other components as well. And they've got contracts, of course, set up at a certain time and place. And then the prices of all the materials goes up. That makes it very hard for them to actually turn a profit on the sale of the homes they're building.
Right.
They also have this labor shortage that I think every business sector is coping with right now, where because of government policy in many cases that made it literally more lucrative for people to stay home and watch TV than go to work, people don't go back to work. And it's not surprising, and people respond to incentives. An incentive has been created by government action for folks to stay home and not go get a job. And so now we're paying a price for that in terms of driving wages up while material prices are going up. And ultimately what this means is we're looking at the real danger of a cycle of serious inflation now in this country, which we haven't had to deal with for decades.
Yes. Yes, since the 70s, early 80s. And you know, for those of us who live through those times, to remember that inflation steals from everyone. Inflation steals from everyone because it diminishes your purchasing power, and it's insidious. And once it gets going, it's like a fire, and you've got to, you know, to like redouble your efforts to try to catch up with it and then rein it back in.
It's a cliche, but the hardest hit are those on fixed incomes.
Yes,
during these kind of cycles, and that just makes it tougher for our most vulnerable citizens.
So these are the sorts of things where, I mean, we need, again, I know the listeners have heard me say this many times, we need leaders in Harrisburg who take the long view, and that we need to prioritize growth, and that to do that, we've got to make government live within its means and not spend money faster than people can earn it. And in that way, the discipline of saying no is really the key virtue. Everybody has an ask, but a lot of times the answer needs to be no. So anyway, I'll get off my soapbox and thank my friends for being here on the program this week. Steve, where can people go to learn more about you and the awesome things that are happening at Commonwealth Foundation?
CommonwealthFoundation.org is our website.
Outstanding. Rebecca, where can people go to learn more about you and your organization?
The Pennsylvania Motor Truck Association. You can find us at PMTA.org.
Outstanding. As ever, you can find me online at PAManufacturers.org. And on Sunday mornings at 8:30 on the Pennsylvania Cable Network with PMA Perspective. So from all of us here at Capital Watch, thanks to you for listening, and we'll catch you next time. And now, a town hall commentary from Loman Henry.
Thank you, David. The new normal. Of all the COVID-19 pandemic phrases to enter the popular lexicon the past year and a half, it is one I hated the most. That is because of the people who were using the term. Folks like Governor Tom Wolf, who intended the new normal to be one of extended, if not permanent, government regulation and control over our lives. But events of recent weeks have given rise to hope that the new normal might be one of enhanced freedom and opportunity. Among the lessons learned during the pandemic are that our rights and freedoms are fragile and must be jealously guarded, and that many laws and regulations are barriers to innovation and progress. Here in Penn's Woods, one of the most important aspects of the new normal is that never again can a despotic governor wield unchecked powers through the endless exercise of emergency declarations. In an historic act, we the people ensured that by amending the state constitution to give our elected lawmakers the clear ability to end such power grabs. The draconian actions of Governor Tom Wolf laid waste to tens of thousands of small businesses and exiled hundreds of thousands to the unemployment lines and a bureaucracy which itself was marked by chronic ineptitude. We have three branches of government for a reason, and the governor's predisposition to act without consultation or collaboration made a bad situation infinitely worse. Thus did, for the first time, many people realize the importance and impact a governor can have on our everyday lives. We also came to fully understand how the third branch of government, the judiciary, can be co-conspirators in stealing our freedoms through activist rulings and essentially rewriting laws. With elections for statewide judicial offices this year and an open seat election for governor next year, we have before us the opportunity to further restore constitutional balance to state government. During the COVID-19 pandemic, many regulations, particularly those involving the delivery of health care, were relaxed or suspended. In exercising their newly approved constitutional authority to end Governor Wolf's emergency powers, lawmakers were careful to leave in place the relaxation or suspension of many regulations that expedited the delivery of health care services. Look for new legislation in the coming months to make many of those changes permanent. At the national level, we learned how important it is to remove regulatory barriers and approval processes slowed by a moribund federal bureaucracy. The Trump administration implemented Operation Warp Speed that got the government out of the way and sped up approvals to allow the private sector to develop effective COVID-19 vaccines in record time. As a result, countless lives have been saved and the pandemic, at least in the USA, has been largely brought under control. What this has proven is that many of these regulations and approval processes are either not needed or unnecessarily complex and slow. Going forward, reforms need to be implemented to remove these barriers to the development of other pharmaceutical products so we can more quickly make advances in the prevention and treatment of more diseases. We also learned what does and what does not work. Pennsylvania and other states with dictatorial governors suffered a prolonged and more severe pandemic, both medically and economically, than did states which took a more hands-off approach. Florida and its governor, Ron DeSantis, have emerged as the gold standard of how to handle a pandemic: reasonable caution without excessive government interference. The COVID-19 pandemic spurred many citizens who otherwise paid scant attention to state government into action. Social media was alive with activists pushing back against Governor Tom Wolf's draconian policies, and many went into the streets attending rallies and protests. Having been awakened, the new normal should include a continuation of this citizen engagement. But the most important aspect of the new normal is a new appreciation for the old normal. COVID-19 impacted the life of all of us in one way or another. It closed schools, churches, and community events. It isolated many from family and friends. Those things we took for granted were suddenly gone. If nothing else, as all of those things return to the old normal, our new normal will be to appreciate that normal is actually something very special. With a Town Hall commentary, I'm Loman Henry. If you miss hearing Lincoln Radio Journal on your favorite radio station, audio of our complete program is available on our websites, LincolnRadioJournal.com and LincolnInstitute.org. For 26 years, Lincoln Radio Journal has been heard on public affairs-minded radio stations throughout the Commonwealth, including WBFD-AM in Bedford, WGPA-AM in Bethlehem, along with WHLM-AM and FM in Bloomsburg, Pennsylvania. The Lincoln Radio Journal is produced weekly by the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. The Lincoln Institute is completely funded through the generosity of individuals, corporations, and philanthropic foundations, including the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association, the Allegheny Foundation of Pittsburgh, and the Houston Foundation of Coatesville, all of whom have helped to underwrite the costs of this program. Lincoln Radio Journal is a trademark of the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. Comments and opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Lincoln Institute or of this radio station. From the Lincoln Broadcast Center in Harrisburg, I'm Loman Henry. Thank you for listening to Pennsylvania's most widely broadcast public affairs radio program, Lincoln Radio Journal. Plug into the pulse of Pennsylvania. Thank you.